everyone. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to Everything You Need to Know About Music, where tonight I am going to be schooled from my friend Seth. Say hello, Seth.
Hello.
On an artist I have no idea about who you're doing tonight. Okay. Which I'm accentuating the fact that I have no idea because I'm learning as I go through these that I'm the only one that doesn't know. Literally right now, because by the time people hear it, they will know who it is because they have seen it and they have clicked on it and they know who it is. You know who it is because you're prepared to do it, and I'm the only one in the dark. So
as of at this moment, at for this the moment, listener,
right? Yes,
this sounds dumb because they know.
Correct.
They and I'm going to give them clues, and they're like, they're bad clues because we all knew that.
Are you going to give me clues?
Jason doesn't know.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, sure, all right, sure. All right. Okay, so.
Thank you, by the way, for coming and doing this.
Oh,
appreciate
man.
It.
No, thank you.
You've done such a great job in the past. And we have such a similar style of taste in so much of the music that we listen to. So this is just a lot of fun for me. Yeah.
And this one, I will say, I'll tell you later.
Oh, all right.
Let me drop some clues first.
All right, go ahead.
Let me drop some clues first.
You got it.
Okay, so this is somebody that might be seen as a controversial or ridiculous statement, but in my mind, my opinion, I look at him as like the original John Mayer. Okay.
Whoa. All right, right? Pause.
And it's weird that
the original John Mayer.
Now, when I tell you, you're going to say you're wrong in that, but this is my opinion.
Okay. Nope. That's fair. Wow.
So this person has sold over 100 million albums.
What?
Written over 170 songs. So he's a songwriter.
Okay.
Released 20 studio albums.
Okay.
He's a drug addict. Okay. Spent 9 months in a psychiatric hospital.
What?
Played with the Beatles. He dated Joni Mitchell. He worked with Carole King. He married Carly Simon. He's a 6-time Grammy winner.
Oh, I know who you're going to do.
Go ahead.
Wow. Yes. Yes. Yep. Well done. Wow. And now I'm part of the group who knows. Wow. Wow.
Who let's confirm that.
Well, okay.
The people reading it are thinking.
Wow. Wait, I'm going back to the
original John
the original John Mayer thing.
Yes.
Wow, I see what you're saying. I really see what you're saying.
You know why I say that? Let me explain. Well, okay, let's hear your guess, and it sounds like you're confident, and I feel like you probably know. Sure.
Yeah. So
go ahead. Sorry.
James Taylor.
There you go. There you go. JT, the original JT.
You know what? You did really well. Very well done. Very, very well done.
I'll say that I had to go back, and I've listened to many of these podcasts, but I admittedly have not listened to them all.
Right.
So I went back and looked over all the episodes to make sure that you didn't talk about him before.
I have not.
Which I'm glad.
Oh,
and I don't
brilliant.
Know if you were a fan of his or not.
Huge.
Oh, go ahead. Okay.
Huge. Absolutely.
You know, I often say that if there's a desert island album, he's in my discussion. Just for like a greatest hits. Because if I'm on a desert island alone, I like the mellowness of just having JT sing to me and you know,
really good.
Yeah. Yeah. And go ahead.
No, I was gonna say what happened to me when I found out about him was just from looking through guitar books.
Yeah.
When I was young and was playing guitar and learning guitar. Mm-hmm. I got through the Beatles book. Mm-hmm. I went cover to cover on that.
Yeah.
And then I started buying some other books and I bought what are called fake books.
Okay.
Which are basically like just a bunch of songs that are popular songs, they aren't the actual sheets from the publishing companies, which is why they're called fake
they don't
books.
Have to it,
like
sure.
they're not rights
to it. Yeah.
But it's just the words and the chords.
That's cool.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Right? And so there's a bunch of James Taylor songs,
oh,
obviously, because he's a great guitarist.
Yeah.
And because he's got big time.
Yeah.
And he was one of those guys where you have to be really good to play him well.
No kidding, really?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Because he plays a certain style of picking and a certain style of strumming, which you have to be a pretty good guitarist to emulate.
Okay. See,
so you could play, you could strum the chords, but it doesn't sound like the song that he's playing. He's really, really good. And so I almost kind of gravitated away from him until I got better. And then when I came back, he's really good.
Yeah.
His songwriting and song compositions of what he really does is really good. So I'm excited about this. This is great.
So let me go back to why, you know, the people who are who might be listening who say, you know, the John Mayer comparison is outrageous, and
no,
there are parts
so.
To it.
I don't think so.
This is why I've always thought that he's kind of like, I hate to say this, but for James Taylor, it was when I was growing up, it was like he was kind of like that milk toast sort of just bland. And I wasn't into that. We talk about hip hop a lot and soul music and stuff, and it's just not that.
Yeah.
And I thought it was sort of lame. But his big fan base back in the day was women, was
sure
moms. Yeah. I hate to say, you know, no offense to anybody out there, because now, you know, look at me. I'm a huge fan. When I was growing up, so there's the John Mayer comparison, as I said. When I was growing up, James Taylor was my mom's dude. Like she, yeah. In fact, you know, it's why would there be any reason to dedicate a podcast to anybody? But Mom, this one's for you.
That's beautiful.
I love you. This is you did not get me into James Taylor. I'll get into that. But you know, you steered me away from him for some time. And
but this is for you.
Yeah, but for you. Yeah, she. You know, like I said, I thought it was lame. I just thought the music was just boring.
Do you think it's because we were young and didn't want to hear that kind of stuff, or we didn't understand it?
Both.
Okay.
I think so. And I think, you know, for me, my taste in music has changed and changes.
Yeah.
And,
you
know,
grow up, you evolve.
Yeah. I mean, there's some things that will, you know, I think I'll like forever. But, so, you know, always listening to the Christmas albums that he would make.
Oh, right.
And that's what me and my mom would play. I don't think my dad was overly into him, but my mom was. And I just knew, like, if there was any artist, I knew my dad liked the Beatles, and he had a ton of records, and you know, I knew he liked that, and they'd listen to musicals that I grew up on, and Jesus Christ Superstar, and different things that we would listen to, but for my mom, it was always James Taylor, and I don't know anything else that she really liked, and I'm sure there's more, obviously.
Yeah, right. And but you associate him with her.
Big time.
That's cool.
Big time.
That's cool.
Big time. So in 2004, I was working at a Gold's Gym in Hershey. Mm-hmm. Just graduated college, not a couple years before that. And he had shows in all throughout central Pennsylvania, including Philadelphia, Hershey, Harrisburg, Scranton, wherever.
Yep.
And their main hub over that course of time was in Hershey. So he and the band, it started with his background singer, would come in and work out.
Oh, come on.
And yeah, and he never did. And we kept saying, when's James going to come by? Well, he's traveling or whatever. The day before the Hershey show, he came in himself, worked out. We got his picture taken with him. He couldn't have been nicer.
Wow.
You know, just a really great guy. And they said, here's some tickets to the show. So I called my mom and said, Mom, I have two tickets to James Taylor tonight in Hershey. And it was kind of raining, and she has no sense of direction. And they live about an hour, hour and a half north of Hershey. My dad does a lot of the driving on those other things. So she's like, I can't go. So we went with that. So I went without her, and you know, went with some friends, and they had said, the background singer said, this guy Arnold McCullough is his name, he said, call my cell phone, here's my cell, call me at the intermission, you guys can come back and hang out.
Stop.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So he's playing and playing, and I still didn't really love him at the time, but now I'm hearing songs that, wow, I grew up with these songs, and I'm kind of digging it a little bit. And
is he a black guy?
Arnold McCullough?
Yeah. Is he the black guy?
He's the black guy, yeah.
Okay. Dude, that guy's amazing.
Yeah, he's good.
Like, his live album, when he's singing, like, there's a couple of places where he goes nuts. Like, I've seen that concert.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen the DVD. If it's the same black guy, that guy's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. It's him. That's him.
Holy
same
crap.
Guy. He's actually in, Tom Clancy movie. Ben Affleck plays Jack Ryan back in the day. I forget what book it's based on, but it came out after 9/11, and they have a terrorist who blows up a football stadium in Baltimore.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
And Arnold McCullough is the one who's singing the national anthem in that movie right before the bomb explodes.
Stop.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Cool.
All right, anyway, so Arnold says, his background singer says, call my cell phone at the intermission. You can come backstage and hang out with us.
That's
and
so we'll cool.
Just hang out. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. So it starts raining in Hershey, and it gets to the part of the intermission. And we're like, oh, man, we're going to go backstage and hang out with James Taylor and his band, you know. A different vibe and scene, I'm sure, from back in the 70s. But now, you know. Yeah. So it gets to the point, and James goes, you know, I know it's raining out there, Hershey, PA. You know, this is where we take our intermission. But you want me to keep going? And everybody,
no.
And we're like, no.
No. We could use a break here, actually.
Yeah, let's take a break. but no, they didn't. They kept going, so we didn't get to hang out
with them. Oh, that's too funny.
Yeah. But anyway, so from that point on, I started to learn a little bit more about him, about his songwriting and just interviews that he was on. You know, he's been on Howard Stern and just super, I think, transparent, and he tells a lot in his interviews and yeah. talks about his previous life and some of the things. So I've become a fan. So, you know, I'll tell you a little bit more about what I've learned. And okay. I know this will be in three songs as you wanted in the past. I haven't lived up to that.
Listen, you do as many as you want. Well, I never stay true to my own rules.
I'll get three JT songs in there. okay, so he was born on March 12th in 1948 in Massachusetts. And they actually moved to Chapel Hill, North Carolina in 1951, where he was raised. He would still spend his summers at Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was always a Northeast guy. Yeah. I remember, right? That was his vibe. Like, that's like a big part of his music and a big part of the feel, right?
Yeah, I think he's a big Boston Red Sox fan, which always annoyed me, but he...
You know, there's some people that are just like California people,
yeah, right.
California bands, right. or like, you know, Southern guy. He's a New England guy.
It sure seems that way, exactly. Yeah, so he was born there, moved down. His dad actually became the dean of UNC School of Medicine.
So
he worked his way up there, so he was really, his dad was obviously a big influence on him. He's got siblings, and he would say that in Chapel Hill, they kind of lived in the country a little bit. And he said there was just a lot of time to be around family, listening to music, and that's how, you know, they became a very musical family. It wasn't because of either of his parents necessarily. His dad actually spent some years in, I think it was Antarctica, you know, like 2 or 3 years in Antarctica doing some things. And so, and he was an alcoholic, his dad was, but, so going back, he actually, I'll come back to this, but he, you know, without breezing over, and we'll come back, but I said in the beginning, he had an 18-year drug addiction. So he started using drugs in about 1967 after his band failed in New York.
Okay.
So he was living in New York. You know, he grew up in North Carolina, moved around, went to New York, tried to start this band, and were doing okay, and the band failed. But he got into drugs at that point. He spent 9 months in a psychiatric hospital after battling depression. And so got a lot of depression on... that runs in his family and addiction that
and
runs in his family.
Did he recently write a book about
A
memoir. Okay.
He wrote a memoir. Yeah.
I remember seeing or reading something about that.
I forget what it's called.
As do I. But I remember that was a big deal. Like, it was his experience there.
Yeah.
And during that process. Yep. Yeah. He's becoming very vocal about it, mm-hmm. right? Something like that. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah, yeah. That's exactly right. So, you know, you talked about his guitar skills. He actually learned the cello. That was where he started. He learned the cello before learning the guitar, and he credits a lot of that, the way that he played the cello, to the way that he now plays the guitar. Like, you even said, he does a lot of picking of the guitar, and it's kind of a unique sort of way. But that absolutely influenced his style of picking with his fingers, because he learned first on the cello.
Unreal. Wow. Yeah. Interesting.
He wrote his first song at the age of 14. He was playing coffee houses by 15 with a friend. You know, we talked in the podcast about Sam Cooke, just about that age. You know, what are you doing at that age?
Playing with G.I. Joes at 14. Right? I'm sorry. I don't know what...
That's right. I'm obsessed with sports. I
feel like, I don't know. Maybe there's a bit of that generation's... There's an age adjustment. Like, maybe 14 back then is really like 18 today. I don't know. But they're all starting at such young ages.
Yep.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It really is. Yeah. It's really interesting to see. And, you know, I think, you know, you hear these stories and you go, wow, who's that? It's a select few. You know, there's a select few that really start and continue and make it.
But they were doing it.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's pretty wild. Cool.
So, all right. So let's go right into just his first album.
Okay.
Self-titled, James Taylor, 1968.
1968. All right, wait. Can we just pause there for a second?
Yep.
Because I know JT's music a little bit. And 1968, you're thinking... Or at least I am, psychedelic rock.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking soul music. I'm thinking Motown.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, you know, Cream.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Beatles. I'm thinking hard stuff. I'm thinking there's 68 is probably, in my opinion, the greatest, one of, if not the greatest years for music ever.
Yeah.
And then you got him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally different.
Totally different.
Totally different.
There's a big folk, you know, you got Dylan, you got some others that are, you know, you've got folk singers.
He's not that, though. He's in the same category if you put them on a radio station. But he's not the same, in my opinion. He's in the same group tangentially. Mm-hmm. I don't put him in the same category.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I mean, you look at like a Art Garfunkel. You know,
Right.
I don't think James Taylor's in that category. I think he's more of like a pop sort of rock.
Are there not
rock.
Maybe some artists that have their own category? Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if you had to pigeonhole them, then fine.
Right. No, I think that's a good point.
And there's so many of these dudes, and it's funny. You and I were talking about a couple of different artists before this, but he's one of these, like the others we were talking about, that maybe go into this yacht rock.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Category, which has just recently been created all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And it kind of tells the story of a little bit of that group.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Anyway, sorry. 1968.
No, good. Yeah. No, 1968, he has his first album, again, self-titled, wasn't a huge commercial success at first. So let's backtrack a little bit.
Right.
So he had just gotten clean from heroin, and his parents convinced him to move to London with a friend. So So I moved to London. He had been making some music. His band had just recently broken up. So he goes to London. He's making some music. He's writing his own songs. He had a friend who he made a demo. Excuse me. Made a demo of his music, and a friend of his from the United States happened to know Peter Asher.
Yeah.
And Paul McCartney was dating Peter Asher's sister Jane.
Sister, yes, right. Yeah.
So now, you also have to think that James grew up, and this is 68, the Beatles really hit it big in the U.S. in 64. You know, so 60 to 64, they're getting big, they're getting huge. They were huge by 68. They were huge. So he grew up idolizing them. I mean, that's what he grew up with. So he has a friend, happens to know Peter Asher. Paul McCartney is dating Peter Asher's sister, Jane.
Yep.
And Peter Asher had just signed on as the A&R guy for Apple
for
Records.
Apple. Yeah.
For the Beatles.
Yeah.
So this is the Beatles' new record label, Apple Records. And he's the guy who's recruiting talent, Peter Asher. And James Taylor happens to know a guy who knows him, who gets the demo into his hands.
That's crazy.
I mean, just, you know, you go from a year ago, you're addicted to heroin, probably listening to the Beatles, playing music, you move to London, you send a demo to a friend who sends it to this guy, who sends it to Paul McCartney, and the next thing he knows, he's in an audition, they got it in front of McCartney. McCartney says, bring him in. He's auditioning to be the first person signed by Apple Records in front of George Harrison and Paul McCartney.
Oh my God. How nervous would you be?
I mean, it's insane. It's insane to be.
So his audition's in front of
McCartney and Harrison. Yes. He's sitting there
playing. All right, little guy, what can you play for us?
And he played a song that we'll get to, and I'll touch on that. The song that he played for his audition because it was on his first album. But before that, I want to come on another song of that album.
Okay.
But remember, now he was 18. So James Taylor was 18 years old, playing an audition in front of his idols, just because he had a demo floating around of his music.
Incredible.
So the album gets made. He gets signed. Again, he's the first act ever signed to Apple Records, and he's 18 years old.
What an amazing thing to say. Right?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, unreal. Yeah. So when he was signed, he had to book Abbey Road or where the Beatles were recording. At the time, the Beatles were recording the White Album at the same time. So the Beatles had first choice of the studio.
Sure.
So he just got scraps.
Oh, my God.
So they would
say,
okay, they would record during the day, and they would come down just so he got in the studio when they weren't in there. That's when he could record.
That's a great story.
Yeah. And, I mean, I love that he could get in there. So he records the album, and the first song that I want to play for that is kind of this is song number one, and this is more or less a staple of James Taylor. This is the one that people know, a lot of people know, I should say. But I want to play the song first, and then I've got a few things to say about it.
All right, okay, cool.
So
this I'm
is
excited.
Hopefully
this is
one you know, and I love the way that I hated it back in the day. Sorry, Mom, but I hated it when Mom played, because they all started with the same little guitar picking.
Right.
All right, so here's song one.
Okay. Oh, great tune.
In my mind, I'm gone.
This is 68? Golly.
This is actually 76, and I'll tell you
why. Oh, sorry.
It's okay, but I'll tell you why.
Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Yes, I'm gone.
So this has become just a staple for people from North Carolina, even South Carolina.
For sure.
You know, it's an anthem for so many of those folks. And when I remember when I moved to to Raleigh, it was like, okay, I'm listening to JT. I'd just seen him live. I'm moving to Raleigh to live in North Carolina, first time outside of Pennsylvania. I'm driving down there listening to this and going, Mom, come on, man. You know, but it got me. It got me.
Yeah.
So the problem was, though, he couldn't promote this song. It wasn't a big hit because he couldn't promote it because of his drug addiction. So he was hospitalized after the album came out. He couldn't even promote the album very well because he was hospitalized because of the drug addiction.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, so he would say he got to be good friends because McCartney and Harrison would really respect it and liked his music. But John Lennon would never show up to help him with anything, but they would go at it afterwards. And James Taylor even says, I was kind of a bad influence on John Lennon.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. So
wow.
Then, you know, the drug side of things there. But he wrote it about homesickness. He wrote it in London while on vacation. And then he wrote it mostly on a Mediterranean island. And he was just homesick and thought, you know, I got to get back to Carolina. So, as I said, this is recorded in 1976, and that's the version that most people know. Now, why was it recorded in 1976? Do you know?
No, I don't know.
It was recorded in 76 for a Greatest Hits album. So, that, and it became a bigger hit than the original. And the reason was, is because they had all kinds of problems with the licensing from Apple Records.
What?
So, he had left Apple Records. He did one album with them. He did the James Taylor album at Apple.
Okay.
Left them. And went on, and he could not get the licensing. So he said, I'm going to re-record it for the Greatest Hits. And that, what you just heard, was the version from the Greatest Hits.
Oh, come on.
This is the original, which I personally like better. And there are some really cool things I'm going to talk about here. But here's the original.
So sorry. He does it originally in 68.
Yes.
He wants to make it and put it on the Greatest Hits album in 76. Can't, mm-hmm, because Apple's holding the license or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm, he re-records the version that you just played that everybody knows. But there's an original version?
And I got to tell you, the original version is more interesting, and I like it better.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, go.
I like it better. So let's give this some volume. Here we go.
Come on. In my mind, I'm going to Carolina. Oh, I never heard this.
Now, I'm going to pause it for a second. I want you to listen to the background singers, because you've got a few things happening here.
Okay.
You've got Paul McCartney on bass.
Stop it.
You've got George Harrison, uncredited, but singing background with Paul. Here we go.
Stop!
Let me start this over again. Here you go.
You're killing me right now.
Listen to the background. Listen to that bass. In my mind, I'm going
to Carolina. Stop it. Can't you see the sunshine? Now can't you just feel the moonshine? And ain't it just like a friend of mine? Oh, the bass, the bass is just Paul.
Right?
It's
just Paul.
It's that walking. Yep. I'm going to Carolina.
There's going to be a line coming up. With the holy host of others standing around me. You know that line?
Yeah.
That's referencing the Beatles. But I'm still on the dark side of the moon. And that's really about he's homesick. He's got a drug addiction. So we'll get to that. Yep, there we go. I'm gone to Carolina in my mind. There ain't no doubt. I like this version better, personally.
Oh, well, now that you told me that, of course I do.
Right? It's not as mellow, and we talked before, like, yeah, he's milquetoast, and, you know, but, you know, I just think this version, a little more upbeat.
Never heard this version.
Yep. I'm gone to Carolina in my mind. He sounds younger, too.
He does. In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina. Strings.
Yep. Can you see the sunshine?
Can you just feel the moonshine? It's a way more fun version, isn't it?
It's a little more upbeat, yeah. It's a little faster, it's more up-tempo. Yes, I'm going to
Carolina in my mind. I
love
it.
From North Carolina probably don't know this one either.
Love it. Dark and silent late last night, I think I
might have heard the highway call. But yeah, so McCartney and
you really nailed it on the first one. I'm really proud of you. That's awesome. That's a great story. Say I'm going, gone to Carolina in my mind. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, well done.
Here you go. It's the Beatles.
Yeah. Still I'm on the dark side
of the moon. So he's thinking to himself, I've got this holy host of others standing around me, but still I'm depressed, and still I've got this drug addiction. I got to get back to Carolina.
Oh, that's really cool.
So, you know, that is, you know, for me, again, that was one of those songs that was like, you know, my mom might play it or something, and I was always a North Carolina basketball fan, so I knew the song. But to hear this version.
Oh, and the story that goes along
McCartney
with it is beautiful.
On it, and,
that's really cool.
Know, it's just a good song.
So, all right, well done. Well done. So song one already. Wow.
The second one. So this is so interesting, and I like this because I knew you're a Beatles fan, and I've as I mentioned frequently, I'm a big Beatles fan. You've got this song, and again, this is one that came out in 76 that they couldn't get the rights to. So I'll play you from the greatest hits first that you might know, and then we're going to talk about the Beatles reference to it. So
okay.
Do you know this one?
Hold on, I don't think I do.
There's something in the way she moves, or looks my way, or calls my name.
No.
So this was this is actually the song that my wife walked down the aisle to. I wanted her to walk down the aisle to this because I said, you know, this is just something that makes me think of her.
Wow. That's beautiful.
This is actually the song that James Taylor performed for George Harrison and Paul McCartney in his audition.
Oh, wow.
Now, this is the remade one. So this is the original. Again, I like the original better. A little bit of a different beginning, but then it just becomes James and his guitar. And someone after hearing this one, a critic said, he's the male Joni Mitchell.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Then I kind of get that.
Yeah.
But it's just James, his vocals, and his guitar after this opening.
Wow.
Listen to these first words.
There's something in the way she moves, or looks my way, or calls my name.
Are you asking me to remember that particular line?
Yeah.
To leave this troubled world behind.
Sound familiar at all?
Yeah, it sure does. Yeah. I mean, do you want me to guess? Yeah, because I...
Yeah, sure.
Because I'm a huge Harrison fan.
Go ahead.
I mean, that's the reference got to be to something. Oh, yeah. Something in the way she
moves.
So
he stole it.
Freaking stole it?
Admits it.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah. It's that first one. Took it. But James Taylor always says, you know, people, they did that all the time when writing songs. They would kind of just, you know, you pick up lines and you could pick up lines here and there.
Isn't it, though?
Yep.
Oh, my God. It's my favorite Harrison song. Wow, wait a minute. It's my favorite song. Top five Harrison songs for sure.
So hard to, like.
It's so hard to do it that
way. Even when we said, like. Yeah, you know, we talked in the last podcast, Sam Cooke being in that top. Like, how do you...
No, I know. How do you rank?
Hard.
I hate it. My son asks me all the time. He's like, no, what is your favorite whatever? Now,
right.
I can't... Sometimes I can't do that.
Right. So this was on Abbey Road.
Yeah.
Of course, they were recording the White Album.
Who,
he
by
was
the way,
making
John Lennon says this is the best song on Abbey Road.
Yeah.
He says George's song is the best.
Which he just didn't do.
Yeah.
Lennon didn't do that.
Right.
Yeah, so that's pretty high praise. So, all right, so he says... So James Taylor says...
Wow.
You know, whatever. We trade lyrics and stuff all the time, and he comes back to this. All right, I'm going to come back to this.
Okay, all right, go back.
All right, so we go back to something in the way she moves, and I'm going to go back. I'm going to scroll this through to the end and see if you see any Beatles reference that James would then say, well, it's okay that he said something in the way she moves because I ripped that off from them.
Oh, okay. A little back and forth.
Doesn't matter what they mean. She says them mostly just to calm me down.
Here we go.
And I feel fine anytime she's around me now. She's around me now.
I feel fine?
All the time. And if I'm...
Dude.
So he was
saying
that, okay, he might have taken that, but you know what? I give him that because I think I stole the line I feel fine from I feel fine with
Come
the Beatles.
Come on!
Because he
great.
Was such a fan.
Such a good
You know,
tune.
Real quick, going back to George Harrison, when George Harrison wrote Something in the Way She Moves,
right.
Tracks Me Like Another, No Other Lover.
No Other Lover, yeah.
The original line, do you know what it was?
No.
The original line was something in the way she moves attracts me like a pomegranate.
What?
So pomegranate was just the placeholder until he found something. He had the kind of the line, but didn't have the right lyrics. So he just put, throw Pomegranate in there. Right? And when you go sing next time, it's, yeah, it was just a placeholder.
Great. Thanks. Now, every time I play that on the piano, I'll remember that particular word for that particular
spot. Here you go. James Taylor taking this.
Oh, wow. Well done.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So, and he admits he stole it.
Let's not say steal. Let's say borrowed and influenced.
Or just, it was an influence with him. Yep. So, this was, first album was James Taylor, self-titled, and it was the only album on Apple Records.
Right.
His second album, Sweet Baby James, came out in 1970. So 2 years later. Like I mentioned, the first album, Sweet Baby James, James Taylor, right, the self-titled one, it wasn't a huge success. And hence probably the reason why we never, James Taylor, the self-titled album, wasn't critically acclaimed. And like you said, you really hadn't heard a lot of those songs from it. And that he went right after it came out, or while it was coming out, he went into to a rehab center for drugs. And that's, a lot of the reason why he couldn't get out and promote it. So people did not know the songs.
Was there any major single that they wanted to push or promote, or was it just the album, or did he not ever really even go that far? Like, was there a hit or a semi-hit that came from it, or no?
Well, I think the hits were those two. Something in the Way She Moves and Caroline on My Mind. Now, I could go back and be wrong, and I'm probably missing something.
But nothing major that...
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, nothing other than those two that you would know.
Got it.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's
I mean, you might know different versions of them because of Apple Records had the licensing rights. They couldn't...
Got it.
They hadn't been released and played much, but the greatest hits were. So 1970, he goes and makes Sweet Baby James. And this album actually made it to number 3 on the charts. It was nominated for Album of the Year in 1971.
Oh, wow.
It's a big album. Yeah. And there's a lot of songs that you would potentially know from that one. And this is probably my favorite and the most popular James Taylor song is what I want to talk about next. But I want to go ahead and play it first. Now, because there's a lot to unpack.
Okay.
Because one of the things that I love about songwriters is when they can tell a story. So that,
for sure,
somebody that, whether it's hip hop, soul, rock, whatever, when there's a story that goes with it, I just can connect with it more. And this is one of those ones that you just go, okay, there's a good story here. So let's go ahead and listen to this. I'll probably talk over it a little bit.
Okay. Oh, great tune. Great tune.
Do you know a lot about this?
I do know a little. So listen to that guitar. You're right, though, about his intros.
You kind of know it, right?
Yeah. Just yesterday morning, they let me know you were gone. Suzanne, the plans. His little fills after each of the parts of the verse.
Right.
His little guitar licks.
Now that...
Our quintessential hymn.
This first... So the song is written in 3 verses.
Okay.
So the first verse is about a former girlfriend of his who committed suicide. So, hence... what he says, they let me know you were gone.
Right.
Didn't know who to send it to. So she died when he was in London recording the first album. So he was recording his self-titled album. She died. His friends back home knew about it, but they didn't want to tell him because they didn't want to... This is his one shot at fame, so they didn't want to tell him. So he actually didn't find out until he was done with the album. It was about 6 months later.
Oh, come on.
So he wrote this first verse.
About that.
About her. And I wrote down this song. I just can't remember who to send it to.
I've seen fire and I've seen rain. Wow.
It's like
when you know those kinds of things, you hear the song differently.
Like I said, this goes back to my mom playing this, and I didn't,
Yeah,
all right.
You
this
hear
is
it.
So boring.
You're not listening.
Yeah. Right. But I always thought so the second verse then takes on a completely different storyline. So he wrote this in 3 different pieces. So here's the second verse. Don't you look down upon me, Jesus. You gotta help me make a stand. You just got to see me through another day. Now he wrote this when he was in a drug rehab center in Massachusetts. My body's aching and my time is at hand. And he's speaking directly about drug use and depression.
Yeah.
I hear this and I actually get, this is weird, but maybe it's not weird. This is what music does, but it makes me sad.
Yeah. Yeah. When you can be empathetic with the singer or with the artist at the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
You feel it. You feel it differently.
I mean, even just the chorus. Yeah. Some lonely time of confinement, you know. But I always thought that I'd see you again. So he's got the first one about the girlfriend committing suicide, the second one about drug use.
Yeah, now I'm trying to sing it in my head to tell me to where's the third verse going to go. My back turned towards the sun.
Lord knows when the cold wind blows, it'll turn your head. Now he wrote this one about fame and just starting over. To talk about things to come. And this line, hang on. Sweet dreams and flying machines in pieces on the ground. Sweet dreams and flying machines in pieces on the ground. His first band before he moved to London when he was depressed and on drugs was the Flying Machines.
Oh, no.
I always thought he said flying things on the ground, and people think, man, flying machines crashing? No, it was about sweet dreams and flying machines and pieces on the ground.
Yeah, of course. You,
so it really is a sad song.
Oh, for sure.
So he, in this on this album, he's got... You know, a lot of big hitters. Carole King is playing on this album.
Oh, wow.
And so she actually wrote a song in response to this. There's a line in here. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. So Carole King wrote You've Got a Friend in response to this.
Oh, come on.
And then James Taylor recorded her song
about
him. And this was his biggest,
this is my favorite guitar song that he does. I was literally playing this afternoon on the piano.
This is written by Carole King about Fire and Rain.
She wrote the song about, as a rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because of the song he wrote, and now he recorded that song.
It was so sad.
I love it. I never knew that.
I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. She writes, You've Got a Friend.
Listen to this song. Seriously.
That gives me, like, goosebumps sometimes. I think, man, these people love each other.
Listen to how simple it is. Just listen to it. Oh.
Again, it's just
this song is moving. It's really, really, really moving.
But again, my mom's playing this when I'm a kid, and I'm like,
no, it doesn't
lame,
hit the
mom.
Same, though. It doesn't hit the same when you're a kid, and it's in the background.
And the feeling was that this really... captured the troubling times of the 60s and into the early 70s.
Sounds pretty good.
And even, you know, Fire and Rain captured that too. It was the pressing.
Oh, so good. All you got to do is call. Listen to that. I love that little riff right there. All right.
So I'm going to let this play as I kind of close out
okay,
a little
go
bit.
Ahead.
So. Since this, you know, I told you he had all these albums. He wrote all these songs, sold millions of albums, and it's just kind of a household name in a lot of ways now. But he was married and divorced from Carly Simon.
Yeah.
They had two kids together who are also musicians.
Yeah.
And in fact, Ben Taylor, his son, sounds just like him. He's pretty good. You know, if you look at him, doesn't have the hits, but he's now remarried with two twins who I believe are teenagers. I don't know. I think he actually lives up in New England.
Okay.
You had mentioned.
Sure.
I could be totally wrong, but. Just to think, you know, think about his career. He's worked with Stevie Wonder, Art Garfunkel, Crosby and Nash, Bonnie Raitt, David Crosby, Paul Simon.
Yeah.
He actually had a strange encounter with Mark David Chapman the day before John Lennon was shot.
That's right.
He was living in an apartment right
across
next
the hall, across the
to
street.
John Lennon.
I read this story because I'm a huge Beatles nut like you. And he ran into him, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And, like, he said something to him really creepy or whatever.
Yes.
He's like, that
creepy
guy's a creep.
Stuff. Yes.
And then the day after, he was on the phone with someone, right?
Yes.
In his apartment.
I forget who. Yep.
I forget who. It was someone famous, though, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
He was in New York. That person was in L.A. They're on the phone. He hears the gunshot.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And then finds out later.
Here's five shots. And he says to that person, oh, so the police must have just shot somebody.
Yeah.
And it was Lennon being shot.
Oh, my God. Yeah, crazy.
Crazy. He quit drugs in 1983 after Carly Simon divorced him and his friends John Belushi and Dennis Wilson had died. So he finally said, you know, it's time to get clean. He got clean. He kept recording and finally had his first number one Billboard album in 2015.
What?
First album comes out in 68. First number one Billboard album in 2015. Before This World is the name of the album. And his most recent album.
Did you ever check it out?
I've listened to it.
Is it okay?
Yeah, it's what you'd expect.
Okay,
but I mean, it's good.
Yeah,
His most recent album is American Standard. and that won a Grammy, actually, for Best Traditional Pop Vocal Album. So it was one of his six. Yeah. Yep. So just you know, when you hear more about the person and some of the stuff behind these songs, it just means more to you. And
great
for me, I
shouldn't
say
stories.
You, but me. And so he has meant, you know, a ton to me from just, again, connecting him with my mom, and I'm trying to get my wife into him. And from the time that Liliana was born till now with Lincoln, so my two kids,
right.
Every night before they go to sleep, I don't sing it well, but I sing this one to him, and this is what I'll go out
on. Okay, this is your bonus. All right.
This is the bonus album, and I just love it. Now, he wrote this, and I always thought, what a loser singing about himself, sweet baby James. So the story is that his brother had just had a son and named him James after him. So he was traveling from New England to North Carolina to see his new nephew,
right,
just born, named after him. And he wrote a song that he wanted to be like a little, you know, a little kind of song for, he says, like, buckaroo. You
yeah,
know,
right,
go to sleep,
right, right,
buckaroo.
Yeah.
And that's what this, come that's on. What this became. Yeah.
Another great guitar song, too.
So there you go. There is
just
a little bit of
James
Taylor.
Just wait, give me the chorus. You moonlight ladies, rock by sweet baby Jane. Oh, so good. You're bringing up so many songs I haven't heard in a long time, too.
Yeah, right.
Well done. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, man, thank
really,
you.
Really nice
thank
job.
Thank you. No, thank
all
you.
Right, we'll go out with this one. Thank you so much, and we will see you next time.
See you. Now the 1st of December was covered with snow. So was the turnpike from Stockbridge to Boston. Lord, the Berkshire seemed...